Blog Talk Radio.
Beyond the Cover. I'm your host, John Robb, and of course I'm here with Jeff Ayers. Jeff, how you doing, my man?
Doing great. How's it going?
Doing pretty good. And we have an exciting show for you guys today. We are trying to wait on our guest who is going to call in. He is best-selling author Ben, I believe it's Coes, C-O-E-S, or Coes. Am I saying that right, Jeff? I stuck with last name.
I thought it was Coes, but we can ask him.
Coes. We'll go Coes. But he hasn't quite called in yet, so we're waiting for him to call in, but hopefully he will. He's a military political thriller author, which with his series, his first book was Power Down in the series, and it's a Dewey Andreas, is number 5 now. It's called Independence Day, which comes out here, I believe, May 26th. I that should be good. Fifth book in the series. He's working it.
And I got to say, it's the best one in the series yet. It's very good.
Yeah, we kind of talked a little bit about that while we were off the air, and we talked about Power Down, because that's the one that I remember reading. And I believe we have Ben here right now on the phone. And let me get him, so just start talking about whatever. I'll be right back.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Ben, besides him writing 5 books featuring Dewey Andreas. He also is a former speechwriter for George H.W. Bush, and he also currently has a day job, so I want to ask him about that as well. And he also ran a campaign for a governor in Massachusetts, and we can ask him about that as well. But he's also a super nice guy. I met him a few years ago on a panel that I moderated, and I asked him about, and I guess I'll ask him this as well. How many ways can you actually kill somebody when you have a body count like his books do? You know, thousands and thousands of people die in each book. How do you keep each kill original and fresh? So anyway, they should be popping on here in a second. The book, Independence Day, is getting rave reviews. One of them that absolutely loved the book, but it's been getting star reviews from places like Booklist, Library Journal, and Publishers Weekly. And it's a terrific book. So, this new book is about a terrorist threat on New York on Independence Day. And it involves Russian hacking as well. And his main character, Dewey, is working for the CIA, but he is basically wanting out after something terrible happens in his life. And this grief has just made him lose his edge. And
okay,
there's nothing
Jeff,
worse than... Oh, yeah. Real quick, and there's nothing
here.
Worse than an agent losing his edge. Go.
Yeah, okay. Well, Ben is... he's coming in. He's saying goodbye to somebody right now, and then he's going to come on here in just a second. So hold on one second.
All right. He's saying goodbye to us, I guess. But seriously, so there's nothing worse than an agent that you need to count on to save the day, and you can't because he's lost his edge. And that, plus this huge threat, makes it one of the best thrillers I've read this year so far. And I've read a lot of them, so... Let's hope he's
all right, Jeff. I have to end this fun with you. I know everybody likes to hear you talk, but
no, they don't.
We're going to our guest now, Ben Coes. Like we said, the author of his latest book is coming out as Independence Day. The book will release here on May 26th. So, Ben, thank you so much for coming on. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
We're hanging. Jeff's on here, too, so we're all three just going to be partying it out here for the next 25 minutes with you.
Well, I'm really excited to be on. So thanks for having me.
Well, let's just jump right in here to the series, and let's get in. This is Book 5, Independence Day. So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about Independence Day, and then maybe about the series leading up to it now for people who might not be familiar with your work.
Yeah, absolutely. All the books are about a guy named Dewey Andreas, and what I write about is current events. And I think that I write fiction, but what I try to do is base it on what I think are very real situations going on around us, threats that face America and the world. And, I worked in politics. I worked at the White House. And so I think that hopefully I bring a level of authenticity to it. With Independence Day is about a threatened attack on the United States that is planned for July 4th by a Russian who has acquired a nuclear bomb, the Soviet-era nuclear bomb, and has put it in a boat that is bound for the United States of America. And the book is really about, can we stop that bomb? And a lot of the stuff behind, the book is really pulled out of reality. I mean, the truth is there are very big concerns about whether or not there exists Soviet-era nuclear devices that were perhaps not turned into Russia when the Soviet Union dissolved. And then how would the United States go about, in fact, learning about a device like this headed for the United States? And I think that, I think I really, hopefully, nailed a lot of some very real aspects of how that would take place.
Well, one of the things I mentioned while we were waiting for you to hop on the air is your books are action-packed, and you have a tendency to kill lots of people. So my question to you, how do you kill so many people and keep it, I guess, fresh and original without doing the same, killings over and over?
I don't know, because I feel like, I'm not trying to necessarily write violent books. I have seen that world, and I think whether we like it or not, there are people who die at the cutting edge, and I write about it, of our efforts to keep the United States and our allies safe. And it's only getting worse. And I think it's funny because people will say, I think it was you who said there were more, and with my last book, Eye for an Eye, you said something like, there were more headshots than at a beauty salon.
That was me.
That sounds like Jeff.
Which is like my favorite line ever, by the way. But, the reality is that is what's going on out there. If you heard that voice, it's because I'm paying for a parking ticket. I'm in Boston.
That's all right. We love live radio. This is what makes it fun.
Yeah. Well, I was at this dinner with a bunch of buddies and had this alarm set where it's supposed to vibrate and to call you, and it didn't vibrate. So anyway, I'm paying my parking ticket and now I'm on the road.
Normally you hear that coming from a woman, not from a guy.
What should be fun for your listeners is whether or not I make it home.
Yeah. No. That could be the mystery. That could be the mystery within the book.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
No, I think there are, you know, back to your original thing, you know, are they violent? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I think that whether we like it or not, that is how it, I mean, I've spent a lot of time with people in different aspects of the national security infrastructure, military, mm-hmm. as well as some agency people, and you know it's violent at the end. I think that you know, I don't try to put gratuitous violence in there, but I don't try to shy away from it.
No, it's not gratuitous. No, I would agree.
Even though they're more headshots than at a beauty salon. I'm going to get that framed someday, Jeff. But
hey, Ben,
by the way, where are you guys right now? Are you in Seattle?
He's in Seattle. I'm in Los Angeles.
Ah, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Now, what was the all man to? That I'm in LA or that he's in Seattle or that you're
no,
starting
No, man,
Boston?
Like, I wish I was out there. I love those both cities.
Well, and you know, the thing is that we know all three of us live in cities that would be potential targets. Of course, Boston has the Boston Marathon bombing. You know, Seattle, Los Angeles would be potential targets for the type of violence that you are talking about here in your book. So I guess whenever I talk with military thrillers, like I had the honor to be able to interview Vince Flynn back then, I talked to Brad Thor, many, many big guys, is I always kind of wonder, the books that you write, of course, they're scary in the aspect that this stuff could happen. But when you're writing it, do you think about that aspect of scaring somebody that this could happen, or is it more along the lines of, look, this could happen. You need to be more aware of your surroundings and what's going on.
It's definitely the latter, I think. And I know that others like Brad Thor feel this way, and I think Vince used to feel this way because I talked to him about it. Mm-hmm. There are guys who are out there on the front lines trying to prevent terrorists from hurting America. But what do you do if you're not one of those guys? And I like to believe that I am hopefully writing about scenarios that people hopefully will pay attention to. Because I feel like I definitely have a lot of contacts in that infrastructure, in the national security infrastructure. So I don't feel like I'm giving like a roadmap to people. I feel like we're probably a step behind some of those people, and you know, maybe I'm giving a little bit of a map to the good guys to find those people. I think my next book, the one that I'm about three quarters through, is about ISIS. And I think that some of the things that I am writing about and in talking to different people in that kind of world and researching, you know, I do think that there are some vulnerabilities that I'm writing about for that next book, my sixth book, that, you know, it are definitely the first time I've really felt like I'm writing about things that I think are new and where we are unprepared for them. For Independence Day, which is about a nuclear device, you know, that has been unaccounted for coming to the United States, I think we're on top of that, but I think that's a real risk. I mean, the issue of what happened with the Soviet Union and its collapse and the fallout from their nuclear weapons and highly enriched uranium is actually very interesting because, you know, when the Soviet Union collapsed, they were bankrupt.
Right. And
we had spent 30 or 40 years trying to bankrupt them. We had really elevated our levels of spending the last 5 years under President Reagan, and ultimately they were bankrupt, and the country collapsed. But the thing is, they had positioned nuclear weapons in countries that all of a sudden were independent: Ukraine, Moldova, a number of others, Georgia. And so the question was, what happens with those nuclear weapons? And of course, Russia was like, all right, give us our weapons back, everyone. And a lot of those breakaway republics said, all right, here are the weapons. But some of them said, no, you're not getting our weapons. And at that point, Russia was bankrupt. So they had no ability to, you know, if they wanted to buy the weapons or the uranium, to acquire them. And so if you think about it, it's actually fascinating, the fact that the United States of America went from spending hundreds of millions of dollars manufacturing nuclear weapons in order to defeat the Soviet Union, to all of a sudden spending hundreds of millions of dollars that we were literally paying to the Ukraine in order to buy their weapons and give them to the Russian central government. You know, so we were fighting them in the Cold War, you know, who could build more bombs, and all of a sudden we're then supplying bombs. And to me, Russia is fascinating, and the whole question of the dissolution of the Soviet Union is fascinating, and the villain in this case is someone, you know, for Independence Day, someone whose parents were involved in the Cold War. And the premise is that the Ukraine perhaps did not turn over all 1,900 nuclear weapons. And I think that there are many people who believe that there are Soviet nuclear weapons that are still out there that have not been accounted for.
Yeah, I could see that.
But Jeff, you read the book, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You saw the book list review. That was me.
I know. And you, by the way, thank you for your kind review.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a great book.
I got to ask you, Ben.
So when you started writing the series, you could have written about a florist or a teacher or something like that. What made you decide from the get-go that you wanted to write about special ops?
Well, you know, I think, well, first of all, you know, I was very close to my godfather, who was a Navy SEAL, and I was closer to him than I was to my father. And when I got out of college, I went to Columbia, and when I got out, I tried to join the Navy SEALs, and I applied, and I got in. And he helped me to get in. He helped me to train. But before I went out there, you know, before you get sent out there, they send you to a hospital, depending on where you're applying from, and they do a bunch of tests. It was, I think, 2 days of tests where they, you know, scan your brain, your body, and all this other stuff. And that was when they discovered that I had this heart defect. And in 2011, I had open heart surgery to fix that. And it was this, but it was discovered when I applied to be a Navy SEAL. And so, you know, I think that I write about part of the world, and I'm fascinated by the part of the world because I thought I was going to spend maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 years in that world coming out of college. It was just kind of like, I kind of like thought I was going to do that from the time I was maybe 15 or 16. It was just kind of like assumed. And they discovered this thing, it was disqualifying, and, you know, honestly, it was devastating. But, you know, who knows, maybe it saved my life. I don't know. Like, I'm not, it's not like I regret it now, but I think that's why I write about it, Jeff.
Okay.
Because I thought, you know, it fascinates me because I didn't end up doing it. And so I think I do try to write about the world that I kind of thought I was going to be living in for a few years. And then I also, you know, I mean, hopefully what people also get about the guy I write about, Dewey, is I'm writing about America. And I think I have a pretty balanced look at America, but I definitely try to paint, you know, I try to write books about the idea that there are individuals and that you as an individual can, if you're brave and if you fight and if you're tough, you can make a difference. And in the case of Dewey, can in fact, he's fiction, but, you know, he does some obviously impressive things, but it's all about the fact that at the end of the day, he's fighting for the United States of America. And I'm not at all embarrassed about that. I love this country, and I don't think I'm like a right-wing jingoist. I think, I think we live in just a wonderful country. And so, like, I tried to create a character who everyone could like. You know, he doesn't have a political perspective, but he has that old-fashioned kind of American ingenuity where, you know, you might skin your knee, but you keep fighting. You know what I mean? You know, I think he's authentic.
Yeah. Well, I know you have a day job, Ben. How do you juggle between writing as well as your day job?
Well, it's interesting because I was, when I called you, I was at a dinner for that day job. And, you know, it's a great question. I think that, you know, the day job I have is the kind of day job that has a certain built-in flexibility to it. So I work for an investment firm, and so we invest in companies, and so we buy companies. So we buy private companies, and we try to buy, you know, cool companies that are, in fact, we are investors in a company in the Seattle area, a knife company, SOG Knives.
I don't want you near knives, Ben. I'm sorry.
Well, they make the knives that Navy, you know, that they make knives that Navy SEALs use. But we, you know, but the thing about investing is you make the investment. It's not like if you're a lawyer, you need to bill every hour. We make big investments and concentrated bets. And then it really is a matter of sitting back and seeing if the management team can grow those companies. It's not a matter of micromanaging. So we, you know, it's not like we bill by the hour. So that affords the opportunity for what I do. You know, we try, you know, we try to buy one or two companies a year. And once you buy one, it's kind of like, you know, it goes, let's see, did we make the right decision? Did we invest in the right group of people? Are they good people? Are they smart? Are they capable of growing this company?
Mm-hmm.
All those things do not really require a lot of, you know, time. You know, those, it's really up to them. And so it's actually the ideal profession for writing. And, you know, that being said, I go in every day. You know, I get up at 5 in the morning, I write. And then I go into the office. I think when I first started writing, I'm not sure I needed. When I first started writing, I needed to go in the office. I mean, I was paying every bill and every paycheck. And now I think it's, I'm not sure I necessarily need to go in the office. I think I could be a little bit, you know, maybe not show up as much, but, you know, look, I love working. I love going to the office. I like the guys that I started the firm with. As much as I love writing, I also love it, you know, looking at this other part of the world where we're looking at investing in companies and learning about these industries. And a lot of the content, I mean, there are many, many, many things that I've taken from the world of private equity and kind of moved around and shifted and like painted over, but essentially have put into my books. You know, if you read Power Down, a lot of the stuff about Anson Energy and the energy industry and the villain Fortuna come out of my experience in private equity and, you know, working for I used to work for T. Boone Pickens, the Texas oil man and stuff like that. So I probably don't need to work quite as hard as I do, but, you know, I think that I think I'll probably work until I die because I just keep doing it. It keeps me, I'm sure you're the same way. I mean, most of my friends, most people I know, are the same way. You know, you can't just like flip the switch off. I mean, the idea of retirement just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, yes, I can understand it. And I love it when I hear people have retired, but people who retire tend to, you know, do things that keep them active. And, and for me, you know, I just need to be busy.
Yeah, I hear you.
I understand.
I get that one. But, you know, sometimes you sit there and you're like, oh, I just want to relax on the beach and not do much and just kind of take it all in, too. But, you know, there's those things.
Oh, I do that, too. Trust me. Like, I'm definitely a work hard, play hard type of person. I'm not, like, milquetoast all the way. Like, I'm you know, I'm definitely like sitting on the beach just, you know, chilling out. So, and when I'm working, you know, I try to work very hard.
Yep.
Well, it shows in the books,
Ben,
that's for sure.
Yep. Well, Ben, I'll tell you what, we've like blew through this half hour. We want to thank you for coming on and talking about, you know, the personal side of your stories and, you know, and of course your books and everything else. It's been great to be able to finally talk with, enjoy the books that you've been writing here for, you know, the last couple of years, and now you're into book 5. So congratulations on all the success. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk soon, Ben.
Yeah. Well, we're glad you made it home okay. We didn't want to hear an accident.
Well, I'm not home yet, but I'm getting there. But good talking to you guys, and I have a feeling I talked most of the time, so
that's fine.
I apologize
for
that.
Well,
Jeff
doesn't like
to. I like to share. I mean, I would like to hear, like, what are you guys seeing on the thriller horizon right now? Like, all right, I mean, you guys are reading everything. Who do you think who's got chops.
As far as genres go, or what type are you talking about?
Yeah, in the genre.
Yeah, I mean, right now the thing that we see a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of military thrillers that we get about 7,000 to 8,000 books a year sent to us for the magazine. So I mean, you know, we see a lot of cozy mysteries are big, but for the military political thrillers that we see, a lot of it has to do with, you know, Navy SEAL types of things. It seems to be a lot more, I guess you want to say, groups of people more than just maybe one person. I'm seeing a lot more of those where, you know, it's like a squadron, or I don't know, what do they call it, a group that goes out, like SEAL Team 6 and things like that. So I see a lot of that kind of coming around the pike, and it's very, very popular. I mean, it's a very popular genre. It's probably one of the most popular ones that I've seen so much.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Who are some of the authors in that genre?
Well, Brad Taylor's been coming out. Of course, Brad Thor has been doing a bunch of stuff. Dale Brown, yourself. We had A.J. Todd.
Would you put
on
me in that same genre?
Of course I would put you in the same genre. I would put you right up there with those kinds of guys. I mean, you know, I didn't read, you know, your latest book, Independence Day, myself. Now, I don't know if the magazine read it or not. I get the reviews later. We have 22 or so people writing for us. But, oh, absolutely. I mean, I would easily think that you are right up there, you know, to be able to be mentioned with them. Yes.
I would say definitely you deserve to be at the top of the list. And there's a lot of people in there, and you're near the top for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really bad military thrillers that I've read, too.
I'm near the top, but all right, so, Jeff, you got to rank it.
Oh, shit, Jeff.
Come on, dude.
I would say right now, in terms of my personal favorites,
I'm talking about quality.
You and Brad Taylor. You and Brad Taylor are my favorites in the military genre. Yep.
Nice.
Honestly, yep.
Mine would be Brad Thor. I like Brad Thor. There's something about his writing that when he writes a scene, when people are talking, he makes me feel like I'm sitting in the room actually watching and listening to the argument or the conversation. I don't know how it does it, but there's something about that. So he's my top guy.
Really? Well, do you realize if I were you, I would lock all your doors tonight for saying that and not putting me at the top.
You're in Boston. I ain't that worried.
Oh, really? You think it's going to be me? You think
well,
I have anything
you know,
to do
LA,
with it?
L.A.'s a big place.
It's a text message.
Right. That's true. It is. But you know what?
Would you like to amend your answer?
But I will say this, though, Ben. Hey, I'll say this. I don't see Brad Thor on the radio show, though, do you? I believe we asked you to come on.
Now, look, let me just tell you something. I haven't read all Brad Taylor's, but I love what I've read. I haven't read all Brad Thor's, and I love what I've read. So, like, and in my opinion, the more people who read those guys, the more people are going to read me and vice versa.
Right.
Like,
we'll find you.
Like, I think the challenge is about reading versus not reading than it is about, like, me versus so-and-so or whatever. So, like, and I got to say, Vince Flynn was such
a great
gentleman.
Guy.
And helped my career so much. You know, he read my first book, and he came out and he said, he's like, all right, everyone, pay attention. And this guy means something. And then you know, Brad Thor did the same, you know, same thing. And so, like, I'm a big believer in the fact that, you know, you fight for the genre. And I love all those guys. And,
And the other thing, you have 5 books that have been published. I don't know how many your contracts for. A lot of people don't get book 2. So that right there is justification that your writing is up in that stratosphere with military political thrillers.
Oh, yeah.
And you get better with each book.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm not.
Yeah, I'll just say one thing. Jeff thought your first book, he was like, that one wasn't very good, but the other ones are really good. So you can text message him first in Seattle.
Because, really?
And then.
It's
yeah,
amazing.
And then,
people.
And then that way, when I see him dead, then I'll run.
Well, Jeff, you know what's funny? It's like if you did a poll of like all my like, you know, whatever, Facebook fans, readers, whatever. They are like Power Down wins every time. People love Power Down more than anything.
Yeah.
And I just think that's funny, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I like.
I told him I read it. I thought Power Down was great. I told him I thought it was great, but he didn't want to listen
to
me. He was like,
I like Coup d'Etat. I like Coup d'Etat, but I tell you, I think Independence Day is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
It's like, your best book.
Well, if,
I can't believe I wrote it. Like, what? I mean, honestly, I like pick that thing up and I'm like, did I write this?
Yeah.
You know, it's, I know that sounds, I hope that doesn't sound bragging because it's not, it's meant to be the opposite. I'm honestly like,
you're humbled.
I'm amazed. Yeah, I am. I really am. I'm really.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey guys,
we're
thanks
writers,
for having me on.
No, we get it.
Hey, we want to thank you for coming on. It's been our pleasure.
Well, I hope you guys have a good night. And
if you're a Thriller Fest, we will see you there.
I don't think it'll be a Thriller Fest. I'll be at VoucherCon. You guys gonna be there?
Okay. Well, I was just in the one in Long Beach, but I will not be at the one in Raleigh. I'm going to skip North Carolina. Yeah. Not a big fan of that.
Yeah, haven't we had a great run? It's like St. Louis, Cleveland,
Albany,
Long Beach.
Yeah.
I almost got killed
Raleigh.
In St. Louis. I literally almost got killed in St. Louis.
I don't blame you, especially if you went to the east side of St. Louis in Illinois. You're really going to be running for your life. That is a military thriller waiting to happen because that's a war zone.
I know. But I think you should go anyway. I love going to VoucherCon. I don't care where it is because I love seeing, like, Mark Greene and guys like that.
Oh, Mark Greene is a great guy. He's a good friend of mine. He's a great guy. We had him when he first started with the Gray Man. And followed his career, and now he's with Clancy, and so that's great. We like to see him. I like Mark. Good guy.
Well, yeah. I think he's breaking away from Clancy, though. I think he's...
I think he is, too.
You know, he's starting to go... you know, I mean, he's a great writer. I mean, I've been telling him for years, you know, every book you write for Clancy is a book you're not writing for yourself. And
true, but it's a pretty good paycheck.
Well,
sometimes that helps give you that sink roll to be able to kind of sit back and relax and do your own work later. So, hey, maybe it got his name out to a million more people that will now read his stuff because it worked with Andrew Gross and he wrote with Patterson. So
I do. I definitely agree with that. Part of your argument. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I think the other argument, you know, the thing about book contracts is you get paid, you know, they give you an advance, and then once you earn out, then they're royalties, and they can go on forever. And so, but the issue is Mark is, like, writing these books, Don Clancy, once they earn out, he doesn't get any of that upside. In my opinion, it's not fair. You know,
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
And his name's not on it either. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we publish Paul Kempercoast. If you know Paul Kempercoast, we publish his books. He was the first one to write with Clive Cussler. He's the one who started the Pneumophile with Clive. And basically,
cool.
he just got an upfront check, and then that was it. And that's the way that they kind of run it. So yeah. But it did help his career because he goes to the Cussler cons and a lot of people knew his name after that. So he wasn't too upset, but that's good. You know, it does give you more fans and more things. So, but I'll tell you what, man.
Kind of like, good talking to you guys.
It's been great, man. We appreciate it. Again, thanks so much and be careful driving home.
Thanks so much.
Maybe we'll be able to catch up and get you.
I'm literally pulling. But while we're talking, I just filled my.
You just dropped your phone. You made it all the way there, and then he dropped the phone.
Yep. I love it.
He dropped something.
I was doing. Are you guys there?
You're
yep.
doing pretty good. You made it all the way home, and then you dropped the phone.
Oh yeah, I was doing an interview with like. It may have been like it was like Power Down, or you know, it was obviously another book, and it was like an NPR station. And I was like, I was on an Amtrak train, and some dude just starts yelling at me. Because apparently I was doing the interview, and I was like near the quiet car, and this guy was like, you know, mid-50s, like, business guy, but like kind of an accountant type. He starts screaming at me. I'm like, dude, I'm on the radio. He's like yelling at me, like, dude, I'm on the.
You should have said, hey,
in the quieter.
You should have said, do me a favor, give me your address, and that way I can send you a check and then send him a text message. Hey, that's what you're gonna do.
No, so then I like ran down to the dining car, and the guy, and meanwhile the radio person was very funny. They were like laughing the whole time. They're all laughing at me, but it made for a more authentic interview. I will say that.
That's what we love, man. So
it was definitely authentic.
All right.
So
you be good. We want to thank you.
Well, thank you guys. So wait, Jeff, I've met you, John. I have not met you, right?
I have not met you. I interviewed you once for the magazine with Power Down. We did an email interview because you were debuting coming out at that time. And that was probably three or four years ago that I had you in the magazine. So I'll find that issue and I'll send it out to you.
Well, why don't we put it on our agenda to, like, meet at some point, all right?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to meet you. That would be great.
Send me your email. Next time I'm in L.A., I will I'll drop you a note and we'll grab a beer. How about that?
All right. That sounds good to me. And if you're a baseball fan, I'll take you to Dodger Stadium. We'll just be a Dodger game.
Really? I love that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Dodger.
Cool.
That's my team, man.
All
right,
man.
Enjoy. Have a good one.
I think Jeff fell asleep, so I'm just trying to make
up.
Nah.
When you're in Seattle, let me know, man.
Yeah. The rain got to him.
Hey, by the way, the Red Sox just kicked your guys' ass, Jeff.
Oh, good.
Oh, the Mariners suck. We know this. So
they don't suck.
Yeah. Well, the Dodgers don't suck. So we're just going with that right now.
Hey, guys, have a great night. Good talking to you. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for talking about Independence Day.
No problem. You're welcome.
All right, guys. Take care.
So get everybody, that is author Ben Coase. Go to bencoase.com, COEF.com, for more information on Independence Day and all the books he has out. This is book 5 in his series of the Dewey Andrews series. You can check it all out by going to his website. The book comes out May 26th. So Jeff, let's just go right into it. I gotta read a couple things here real quick. Kensington Books has brought out some really great books here. Christine Trent and The Morning Bells, J.A. McCavitt and The Killer Gourmet, Born of War by Anderson Harp, and Final Breath by Kevin O'Brien. KensingtonBooks.com for more information. Also a great thing, Jeff, I know you know about, Brenda Novak each year does an auction to put together for a cure for diabetes. This year she changed things up a little bit. She put together a limited edition book collection with all the proceeds, of course, going directly to the Diabetes Research Institute. So please visit BrendaNovakForTheCure.org. Order the books and find out about that. We've talked about him before. David Morrell has a sequel now to his award-winning book, Murder as a Fine Art. So Thomas DeQuincy returns, an Inspector of the Dead. So make sure you visit David Morrell, and you can get yourself back in 1960s London with that book, Inspector of the Dead. 1860s. What did I say, 1960s? I meant 1860s. Yeah, you go back to 1860s, not 1960s. Shit, go back before Jack the Ripper and see Thomas DeQuincy. So Mary Burton returns with Be Afraid. This is a USA Today bestselling author. Fear of the unknown is terrifying, but the truth can be even worse, and this time a cunning madman will leave no survivors. Pick up Be Afraid on Amazon, where books are sold. And Robert Kadira brings the first book in a new series called Red Gold. Vincent Zandri calls it a thriller packed with deceit and danger, but also compassion. You can visit Robert Kadira, KIDERA.com, to find more information about Red Gold. You can buy the book on Amazon. So that's the ads. Now there's no break now because Ben, you know, it was great talking to him, and we just kept going. So let's just jump right into our books real quick. I'm only going to have one. I'll just go first. Lincoln Child brought out a new book called The Forgotten Room. I've never read Lincoln Child on his own, only Preston and Child. So I'm very curious
really?
To jump into this book. Yeah, I've never read it. I don't know why. I mean, shit. No, but yeah, so The Forgotten Room just came is out. And so I got a hold of that one. I didn't even notice that it was that we had it early. So I'm going to be interested in seeing that one. But it's the newest book in an old series, if that makes sense. So check out Lincoln Child and The Forgotten Room. What do you got, Jeff?
Well, I was going to say, I did the Associated Press review of that book, and I like his stuff a lot. They're great
it's
separate,
good.
And they're great together. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, good, good. So you get...
The book I have is, we mentioned Clive Cussler earlier, so the new Oregon Files has a new author writing with Clive, and it's a friend of ours, Boyd Morrison.
Yeah, we talked about Piranha.
So, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's very well done. It's probably one of the best Oregon Files out there. And I've liked that series.
Well,
so.
Like what I said, of course, in my thing, I said, this is, I go, I think that, you know, that series was down a little bit, but I think Boyd took it to up to the level that it should have been at where it was at the beginning. And I think that Boyd's probably a perfect fit writing partner for Clive Cussler. So, you know, of course, Jack DeBrawl was there, who's great, Paul Kemper coach, Justin Scott. But I love Boyd's solo stuff, so I think he was a perfect fit in for that one.
I agree with you. I was not surprised when I heard he was writing books with him. Yep.
Well, we only got about 10 minutes left, so we're going to be quick on our topic this week. And our topic this week is beginning and endings of books. And it could be movies or anything, so it doesn't make a difference. Whatever we wanted to do. The one thing that we wanted to talk about real quick was the beginning or the ending of the book. Which is more difficult to write for the author? And since we've both written, we can both understand that. But which do you think has more of an impact on the reader? And which books had great beginnings and then the endings just fell flat? So, Jeff, I'm going to start. Let's get the question to you. The beginning or the ending, which is more difficult for you to write?
The beginning is more difficult for me. And I say that because when a story pops in my head, the ending, for some reason, always pops in first. So I have to figure out how to get to that spot. But trying to engage the reader immediately so they want to keep turning the page to get to that point, that's really hard for me.
Hmm. And, you know, I'm the exact opposite. The beginning is what I think of first, not the ending. So the ending kind of is a surprise to me, but once I figure it out, it's very difficult for me to write because I want to make sure that I haven't screwed something up to where the ending now wouldn't make sense. But the beginnings are always easy. I always kind of know how I grab somebody. I always start off with, you know, something with a bang or something coming up. So that's a little bit easier for me. Is the beginning. I think the beginning, does the beginning or the ending have the most impact? I think people talk about endings more than they talk about beginning of books or movies. I don't hear a lot of people coming out saying, oh my God, did you see the beginning of that movie? That was awesome. you know, some
True.
People might say, hey, that beginning fight scene in Skyfall was great. But I think that they talk about the ending more than anything else. I think that's the thing that leaves the lasting impression is how did the book end? So the question then is, and I know that we had a little bit, which endings for you do you think fell flat once you got to it and you were like, really, this is what they left me with, and you just were not, you know, too happy about that?
Well, I wanted to mention your favorite book, Gone Girl, just in passing.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Here we go again. You know, we're never having Jillian Flynn on the show because we made fun of this freaking book so much, but that's okay.
Sorry about that. I had two that I thought were terrible endings that came to my mind. One of them was Mockingjay by Suzanne Collins.
I say that
because I love The Hunger Games, and I loved Catching Fire, and then read the third book eagerly, and I just went, huh? And now they're making two movies based on a book I didn't like, and I still haven't even seen part one.
Well, you know, I saw the Hunger Games movie. I didn't read the books. I'm going to be honest. I didn't read the books. I just wasn't. I don't know why. I mean, my family read it, but I went and saw the movie Hunger Games, and I thought it was decent. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was outstanding. Then I saw the next one, Catching Fire, and if it wasn't for my family being in there, I probably would have walked out after 20 minutes because I was tired of everybody crying every 5 freaking minutes in the movie. Everybody just was crying. There was so much crying going on. And I'm like, why does Jennifer Lawrence get no slack for her crying in a movie that Kristen Stewart gets a lot of slack for and her face? But Jennifer Lawrence always had this pouty face. And I'm like, you know what? I go, if this is the way the books are, I don't want to read them. I have no, I could care less about them because they bored, it really bored me, and I'm not going to go see the next one. Whatever Mockingjay is, I'm not going to go see that because it just didn't do anything for me. It literally did nothing for me. I was not engaged in any character, and I did not care who lived and who died. That was me.
And you definitely don't want to dive into the third one for sure. I guarantee it. Don't bother.
So then, what was your next one?
I have to say, Thomas Harris's Hannibal.
Oh, really?
And I say
really?
That because I love Silence of the Lambs, terrific book, terrific movie. And then I hear, hey, Hannibal's coming out. Okay, great. And the ending of that book was so horrible that I just had to throw the book across the room. And it made me hate it so much. And honestly, I had no interest in seeing the movie after that, too. Just, you took a character that was interesting, and you ruined it.
Well, my two might shock you, because they're going to come from the same author. And it's my favorite author of all time. This is my opinion. I think he is the greatest author of my generation, without
a
doubt.
Can I guess?
Again. Well, you're probably going to know, but go ahead, guess.
It's Stephen King, isn't it?
It is Stephen King. And the two books...
There you go.
...was The Stand, because I felt that he copped out at the end with the nuclear explosion. You build up this entire, you know, you loving these characters. They're going through this journey. They're doing all these things. They're getting down to the end in Las Vegas. And then he just, that's it, just blows everything up. And I go... That's what we were waiting for, was that. So I was really disappointed. I thought it was a cop-out. And the other one, which I guess made me a little bit more pissed than The Stand, because I invested more time in it, was The Dark Tower. I won't give it away, because I still talk to people who have not read the series. But have you read the series?
I gave up.
Okay. The series was great. The book Wolves of Kala is probably one of the top 10 greatest books he's ever written. The Wastelands, the first three were awesome. Wizards in Glass, you can take it or leave it. If you don't like backstory, you can take it or leave it. You can kind of, you don't even really have to read it except for the first maybe 40 pages to see how The Wastelands end. But then after that, you can take it or leave it. Songs of Susanna, again, a lot of backstory. You'll literally be reading it. And if you have to write a 30-page explanation of why you ended a book and a series the way you did, I think that if he had to do it over again, I don't think he would have done it that way. But he had to write an explanation of why he did it that way. And I don't think that you should have to do that if you're an author. I don't think that you should. So those are my two. And it was for my favorite author. So see, I'm critical of everybody. It doesn't make a difference. Either I like it or I don't. I'll be honest with people. That's why when you read our
magazine, I would have thought it would have been it.
No, I thought it was great ending. It was. I thought it was great. I thought that was a great book.
Okay.
You didn't like it?
It just the whole everything that was going on to them. I was like, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's
so
it. That's it.
Yeah. Quick question, John. Since I know we're running out of time, best ending, top of your head.
Book wise or movie wise or what?
Either one, your choice.
Okay, top of my head, Primal Fear comes to mind.
That's a great one.
I didn't see it coming. I guess you kind of did, but you didn't really see it coming. What about you, off top of your head?
Funny thing, same actor, Fight Club.
Oh, yeah. Same kind of freaking premise, too, wasn't it? It was like the same kind of premise. Yeah, I thought that was a great ending, too.
Yep.
I love Ed Norton. And both were great books. I mean, they're both, and see, they're both built off books. And so I thought they were both fabulous books. Richard Diehl, of course, did Primal Fear. And then who was the author of Fight Club? I always forget.
Chuck, and I can't pronounce his last name. It begins with P.
Chuck
Palahniuk
P. wrote Fight Club. Good,
yeah,
was
Chuck
it? Yeah.
P. Yeah.
But the one thing that I think this is the thing for authors, if we want to give a teaching lesson, just because more people might remember the ending, if your beginning sucks, they ain't ever going to get there. I'm a 40-page reader, and if you ain't got me in 40 pages, I'll never remember or I'll never get to your wonderful, fabulous ending that you spent 6 months on in the bathroom cultivating, and then you tried to rush to it because you thought it was great. Each word in a book has a purpose. Each word in a book should have a meaning and should have, it should be a railroad tie to get to Promontory Point, to get to that final stake. So don't skip shit to get there. Take us on a journey to get there. It's all important, just so you know. That's just the thing. So whatever you want to add to that.
Well, I was going to say, that's why I have a harder time with beginnings, because I want to make sure that those first 40 pages are just as good as that ending. And you get to the ending, and you go, wow,
otherwise,
that was worth my
time. Yeah, because otherwise I'll never review your book, Galileo.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to see it because I know it's done, and I know you're going to send it to me because, if I was going to put my hat in the ring to maybe publish that book, then at Thriller Fest, they might need security for you.
Thanks.
So, well, hey, Jeff, it's always a great one, and let's end the show right now by saying on June 1st, who do we got coming on the show? Who do we got, Jeff?
Nelson DeMille.
Nelson DeMille. Yeah. So we're going to have a big one for you in 2 weeks. So everybody, we want to say thank you and goodbye. So again, go to suspenseradionetwork.com for this information on this show and all the shows we have on the Suspense Radio Network. Jeff, as always, it's great talking to you, my man. We will see you in 2 weeks.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.